Welcome to the Social Media Church Podcast. I'm Neil Smith, and I'm excited to be joined again by my good friend Jay Kranda. Jay, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, and I've been off. You guys have been you've been recording some really great shows. I listened to the Kenny one talking about the future. It was really really great conversation about where things are going sure. So I know we're gonna continue some of that conversation, especially with Church Online, because. Yeah. Bringing up some good points.
So many things. And this conversation is going to be centered around Church Online, online church, internet church, whatever you want to call it.
But nobody calls it internet church. I don't know what.
First, Jay, I missed you. I want to get that out there. I've been in Orange County 3 times in the last month, I think, maybe a month and a half. Yeah. I haven't seen you anytime. We really are good face-to-face friends. We just haven't seen each other the last few times. I was at the eChurch Summit put on by PushPay. I got to say a few things. One, thank you, PushPay, for inviting me to be a part of the event. It was one of the most exciting conferences I've ever been a part of. I loved the CEO of PushPay, Chris, shared in his session that just pushed the church leaders to be the most innovative organization on the planet. There's 3 areas they feel like the church is lagging behind in. They feel like they're lagging in leadership, technology, and communication. And that was the center of the conference. There's no fluff. There's no music. It's high production value, but not high production investment. They invested in meat and really investing in church leaders and having conversations. It was so fun. I just want to say, so thank you, PushPay. And thank you.
It was at Disneyland.
My family got to go. They took care of me and my family in a way that I've never experienced at a conference. So that was so fun. So I want to say thank you. And here's the other thing, Jay, I want to say to you and why I brought this up. One, I want to say thank you to PushPay. But I was the guy that has the podcast with Jay Kranda at the conference. Like, oh, I love Jay. I don't know how.
I don't believe you on this. You, like, this is such an podcast
and I love
you're
Jay.
Just trying to be nice. Stop it.
People love you, Jay. And Jay, you're stepping up. So we're on the TV app now. And a lot of people have been downloading our TV app. Watching more on video, and you stepped it up for this one. You're wearing the white t-shirt, the black and white Lakers hat. You got the hooked up background while I've got the boring office gray wall behind me. But thanks for stepping up your video game. Let's talk about social media. Instagram had a big update. You want to talk about that?
Yeah. They started offering up multiple photos. It's definitely, it's weird. You know, you do it the first time, and you're having to get used to the whole, like, you're swiping. I mean, obviously they're integrating. They started this multiple, you know, it's kind of like having 3 windows now on a desktop where they're like, you know, they're to the side and you got to get used to the 3-finger, you know, swipe. But on Instagram, they introduced this with stories. So you swipe and then you can go to your stories. And then now they're doing it the other way, where if there's multiple photos, you can swipe. You can swipe left. And you can see everything that's going on. And the indicator is if you down below the post, there'll be little like open circles that you'll see. And that will indicate that there's multiple photos there that you can kind of go into. It definitely, there's no doubt that Instagram is, you know, with Facebook and everything, they're not joking around. They are definitely, just going for the jugular. It's funny. I was listening to another kind of technology show, and they were talking about how, you know, ultimately, you know, how in the game that Instagram and Twitter and Snapchat and all these, like, they're kind of like, you know, competing against each other, and how, like, initially Instagram got its bootstraps off of Twitter, allowing your Twitter contacts to automatically import onto Instagram. And so Twitter did this nice gesture to try to, you know, build. But then now what Instagram doesn't do is that if you share a photo on Instagram, it's ugly. You know, you just have this ugly link. And how, like, they're not like Instagram has and Twitter has been this like, hey, we're going to help everybody out because we think it's going to help. But ultimately everybody else has monetized it and screwed them in the long run. And you know, ultimately, you know, copying and doing different things. And that's just the nature of beast. But I like it. It's cool. It's definitely, I definitely think Instagram is, you know, I definitely still feel like the user interface on Instagram is, it's just weird. It still kind of feels weird, but I no doubt I started to now in the last the last month, I started to primarily in my email signatures promoting to my large email blast. I started to now only link Twitter and Instagram. And I added Instagram because I'm like, I don't want Facebook. Facebook's a little bit too private, especially on an email going out to like 15,000 people. It's not really where I want everything to go, but Twitter and Instagram make sense for that. So I've started to shift, and I would, my sense is it will primarily now shift to Instagram, especially for ministry stuff, because it's a little bit more personal. Photos I could share, family, people can know me, but I don't know. What are your thoughts messing around with it?
Yeah, so Switchfoot is a client and they've been using it quite a bit. They're on the road right now. And so it kind of makes sense of like, here's some shots from our today's tour or.
Yeah, they're doing that big promotion of like, I've seen it like, you know, you can be here kind of thing.
Yeah, that's us. That's us. Thanks for paying attention to the promotion.
I love it.
Free trip to San Diego. By the time this is live, you'll already be too late to signing up, but they're literally giving away a 5-day trip in San Diego where the guys of Switchfoot are going to give you surfing lessons. They're going to give you a private tour of their studio. Oh. It's such a cool trip and so generous of them to give it to their fans. it's so cool. We're having a lot of fun, but they're doing a great job with that feature. And we're trying to push it on several other clients. So, you know, it's interesting. It's not a game changer, but it shows the continued innovation of Instagram. I also saw Snapchat seems to have allowed kind of like a recommended friends, which seems to be a new feature on Snapchat.
Oh, yeah, I haven't seen that.
So anyways, if you're in the past, you had to go know people that were on there to go, you know, where to find them. Now there's a little more recommendation. I don't know how they're going to develop that out. Jay, you listen to the podcast with Kenny and I. Real quick, I want to give you a chance. Any predictions you want to make for the next year in social media?
No, I'm not. That...
Jay, just one again. Prediction. One prediction.
One prediction?
Prediction.
I still believe in Twitter. So I have a heart for Twitter. It's still right here somewhere, wherever the heart. It's not here.
Okay.
It's little. But I think Twitter will, my hope is it does get bought by Google or something. And there is like this clear, like, let them integrate it into like a larger fold. So it makes sense. But I still don't think anybody does. The networking resource of Twitter is, it's so unique.
Yep.
It works. Yes. And so I just think that, you know, they recently, a month and a half ago, they refreshed like their main login page on the app. And I actually didn't like it. I liked the old Moments setup. I didn't really like the way they shifted. And so I'm like, but I kind of like the idea of where they're going, but I still don't think there's something there. And so I still think that they have the ability to do something. You know, I ran a Twitter ad like a month ago, just I put $10 just to see.
Yeah.
I forgot how they do it. It's so ridiculous that there's no targeting. Like it's like I have no idea why I should be able to, if I want to like, let's say if I'm selling something for a church audience, there's no reason why I shouldn't be able to just go after Church Pro Tools and just totally swamp every audience member I want out of Brady show as possible. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know why, like that would be the paradigm. That's what Facebook did great, was I can promote to your church if I want to. I can
steal your people.
I could steal your audience clients, if I want to pay for it. Like, I don't know why they can't say type in the handles you want to do and do a geo. I don't know why. I think there's some small things if they did. So I think I really believe that. And there's no doubt that I see it. I get it more and more, especially with the apps that they're creating with Facebook. I can see why aggregating video content is so powerful. And I think that will make more sense with transitions to where we're going here.
Yeah. In agreement though, Jay, Twitter should be acquired by Google, become the number three search engine behind Google and YouTube. Okay. So let's get into our conversation today. Online church models. And so Facebook has kind of flipped a lot of the online church models. And so I'm getting a lot of consulting requests around online church. And for the first time in like 5 years, I don't know what to do. You know, like, do you go all in on Facebook Live and move your online campus into Facebook? Do you, you know, do you keep your old and add the new? Do you divert, you know, are you pulling your, and honestly, Jay, that's just the front end of online church too. So then the model becomes, that's your funnel into the worship services, but how are you connecting people into groups? You and I are always talking and learning from each other. of how important a continual funnel is, an intentional funnel of where are you trying to take people to. And the hope is that, from my perspective, that you're not just trying to get people to watch a video. So church is community. Church is interaction. Church is about people to people. And from my perspective, that's whether it's online or offline. You and I both agree that offline is better, but sometimes offline is not realistic. Online is the only form of community. Let's start with the online worship experience, Jay. Your thoughts on Facebook Live, Church Online platform, media social, using Blackstream.com, from a platform perspective, worship experience perspective. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I would say wherever you can stream and offer content, I think you should be there. And if you're large enough and you're at a place that it's not really a big thing, do that. If you're small and you're just getting started, just focus on one. But there's no reason why Facebook Live, there's no reason YouTube Live and even Twitter Live shouldn't be something you are messing with. Because if you're using the right integration, like a Wirecast or something, you got the right technical setup, it's literally a checkbox and pushing it out. And it might be an extra $500 for that software. That's a no-brainer if you're large enough.
Yep.
The key that people get wrapped up in is copyright. That's the key right now, is you're so scared because you're just going to get slapped on the wrist and stuff gets turned down, And so the hard part has been, YouTube was the first one that started doing this, but YouTube very quickly was banning everybody right off the bat. And so people were going to YouTube Live when they opened it, and then churches would start streaming like worship songs for their service, and then their channel would be blocked. And they would get one of those copyright infringements that I get all the time for my personal stuff. And I just check the box. Yes, I'm okay with you promoting your stuff. That's the other thing, is you don't want to have ads on your stream.
Right.
So like maybe they will, it's kind of like maybe they'll allow you to do it, but do you want to have like an ad running on your stream now? Is it like you stream like 3 years ago, where you had like these 20-second Budweiser ads going on before your stream got going, and you're like, I can't do this. And so I'll pay for the premium, but with copyrights, it's so ridiculous. Like, and it's such a nuance. And so what I think Facebook has gotten away with is, YouTube had 10 years of growing up in this space and having to deal with rights and getting sued and all these different things. Facebook literally just turned a button on with live streaming, and they didn't really have all these contracts the same way YouTube. So I felt like Facebook has had a lot more freedom and to kind of just mess with video without really having to like deal with publishing rights as much. And so I think YouTube is figuring it out. And even like my own church, I was just talking to someone yesterday, we have a special agreement that they won't ban us. Facebook, they don't have that developed out yet with Facebook Live, because it's such a new thing that they're not really like developed out. YouTube has to do that because they deal with movies and uploads and pirated stuff.
Yeah.
Facebook is just now getting into, I watched 15 minutes of a local broadcast was broadcasting a Warriors game locally that I couldn't get on TV. And I was like, this is so illegal right now. Like this is so illegal. I shouldn't, but Facebook hasn't, they're going to start squashing that. They're going to have more protocols. So Life Church, they're the ones that have been leading this area. And they said when they first did a Facebook Live of the couple of events, they got slapped and they got blocked and they had to go back and start it up. So the thing is with live streaming, especially with these new platforms, the default's going to be for these people to just block you because they don't want to get sued. And so what you have to do is you have to follow up and say, no, and show like you have like, and be persistent. Just because you get told no, you get blocked or get suspended, don't freak out. Come back, try it again. What you are doing and what larger churches are doing, larger ministries, is they are they're paving the way for the smaller ministry to get on here long term.
Yep.
And so if you want to jump on. I think you need to build those audiences, and then you still need to funnel them to a domain that you can control the experience fully. Yes. That's the problem with these other ones. You can't control it. But say, hey, by the way, we have a more robust experience, and on that experience, you have all your next step stuff. Maybe put a next step link and all those stuff, but lead them to your fuller, richer experience. And I think that's the win.
Yeah.
Where this goes.
That's great advice. So because I was starting to lean towards, you should move away from that and move all in on, go all in on Facebook Live. But I'm with you, Jay. I think part of the funnel is moving people to your platform. that you can own and control from a consistent basis. Facebook Live is a great intro platform. And so what some other campuses is I've asked around, they're doing both simultaneously, where they use Facebook Live as kind of a front door. A lot of people check them out there and they try to move them to their church online platform, you know, and that's where they want them to go consistently. Where in time, I think they're going to be going to their mobile app, their TV app, you know, other experiences as well, where they can connect and engage. But Facebook Live is a good front door. The other thing is, another one of our clients is Prestonwood Baptist here in the Dallas area. They were looking and are looking at going all in on Facebook Live, but what they're doing right now is they're actually Facebook Living segments of their service. So they're picking one worship song and segmenting that. This last weekend, one of their worship songs in 24 hours hit 100,000 views. They have 30,000 on their Facebook page. It's unbelievable to even hit the same number as your page likes. So we're like, let's give it a boost. We put like a $20 boost on it. Now it's at 200,000 views. That's a great front door for their church. Yeah. I told them, let's not do a full service on Facebook Live, because this strategy of doing clips of your service on Facebook Live is really working well. We might do one full service live, but we're going to be driving people to a church online platform for them. So I still think that I'm in agreement, Jay, that you should have your own platform. Because two, you want to have clear calls to action. When somebody accepts Christ on Facebook Live, where are you driving them to? Well, if they're on your church online platform, you say, click this button, click this slide, you know, click this call to action so we can get your email address and follow up with you. You can't do that as easily within Facebook. So I think you really want to move them still to your own platform, whether that's on your website, within church online platform.
Well, and especially when Facebook specifically, and this is the big thing, is like when less than 1% see your content, and that's going down. It's going down to 1% see your content in a text form. But in video, live video, they're prioritizing it in a very high, and you can get, you know, if not 30 up. And so they're just forcing the issue that you should be doing it. You know, don't abuse it. I was working with a ministry that was going like 6-7 times live a week. And I was like, that's way too much, because you're kind of abusing it and people are going to start unfollowing you in the feed. And that's what I do with people who go live a lot, is live a lot, or people, I just, even politically, I've started just unfollowing, and that's becoming a more normal response.
So I disagree with that, Jay. I think I've yet to see a church or a ministry overusing Facebook Live. I have seen it with some political candidates that I follow, just out of curiosity how they're using it, and it got annoying. And I have done it with a couple of friends who maybe overused it, but I have not seen a church or a ministry. And I feel like I follow a lot of churches and ministries. I've yet to see a church or ministry that's overusing it. I would say 99% of churches and ministries are underutilizing it.
Yeah, you're totally right.
I just don't want to freak anybody out. It's like, I just don't think you can overutilize this right now. I think there will be that point. But right now, use it, and use it some more. Facebook Live is a powerful tool. We will find that pressure point, but I just don't see anybody hitting that yet. I see some people outside of church doing it, though.
The only thing I would say is, so this ministry that I was working with is a broadcast ministry, and what they were doing was they would broadcast something at 9 a.m., and then they would end it, and then 30 minutes later start another Facebook Live. And so the key is Facebook is what's very important is the momentum of something. And so once if you post right after each other, like if you do a Facebook Live at 9 a.m. and then it ends at, let's say, 9:30, and then you post text at 11, what you're essentially doing is you're killing the potential momentum of that Facebook Live post, because that's how their algorithm, we don't know a lot about it, but we do know that they prioritize the most recent content and to go out. And so it's almost like you want to provide a 3-4 hour window. If you know something's going to be, especially with live, you want that to be shareable and let the momentum ride. And so this is where, what they were doing is they were doing multiple Facebook Lives in a day, and they were essentially, and what we did was we shifted it. We said, hey, why don't you try out just doing one a day, or, you know, give at least 5-6 hours, and it did help. It did allow the first one go higher. But that's a more of a scheduling thing.
Yeah, and I think it's understanding Facebook's algorithm is so important. It takes, I mean, there's a science to it. And I think that's great advice, great wisdom there. The other step, Jay, that I'm learning, I actually just did a talk at our ministry summit, is learning from the Mormons. And I just basically did some research over about a 3-month time of how Mormons work, you know, and I learned that from our friend Daniel, kind of really introduced me to what they were doing.
He bought a house today, by the way, Daniel Hall.
Dang, way to go, Daniel. Daniel really is like the smartest, you know, he's like a motorcycle rider, you know.
He had a great Instagram post, but the way I saw it was he had a pen, and the pen was my weapon of choice today. And awesome. It was like buying a house, which was a great post, a great Instagram post.
Daniel's growing up. I'm proud of him. Buying a house is a big deal.
Well, Daniel's older than me, so I don't know.
we love Daniel Hall. So, man, I lost my train of thought. I got excited just thinking of stories of Daniel. Some Mormons. But here's the thing with the Mormons is it's just as I dug into a lot of stuff Daniel introduced us to, is they're so intentional of taking you down a path, you know, and so everything is like subscribe, you know, go to this, let's have a conversation. And it's a path of building a relationship with you to kind of introduce you to their belief system. We need to be just as intentional in every step. So when somebody comes to our Facebook Live, what do we want them to do? Like, where do we want them to go when they come? So if our goal is to go from Facebook Live to our church online platform, what do we want them to do there? Well, we want them to make a decision for Christ. We want them to be able to share prayer requests. We want them to connect in a small group, wherever they might be. How do we take them down the funnel? So if they want to connect to a small group, what information are we getting, or how are we helping them to do that? One, how do we do that in an automated way? How do we do that in a personal way? Can you, Jay, you've talked about it before on the podcast, but talk about your path at Saddleback Church of we get them from this point to this point. This is our funnel and where we're trying to take people and how we're intentional each step of the way.
Yeah. So, it first starts with us. You know, we're primarily going after unchurched people. We're not wanting to go after Christian people, but people that are not plugged in. And so we go out into Facebook ads or Google ads, or we resource our church audience to share things. And so it's going out and creating things that invite people into our experience, and then they land on our online experience. And we primarily rely off our on-demand as our primary, because it's probably our best way. And a video will pop up where it's pre-recorded, and I say, hey, thanks for watching online. By the way, we would love to talk to you. And I direct them to a next step card that is very generic, in the sense it can hit. And the first button is purposely there. It says first time to Saddleback. And I don't say Saddleback Church. I just say Saddleback. I'm trying to get them just to click that. I have other options that kind of hit various areas of life. And also on our YouTube video at the end of it, I come on and say a similar thing, but I send them to an email, online@saddleback.com. And so the idea, no matter where they're watching, and I usually say in the video, hey, if you're watching on our website, fill out the next step card, or if you're watching one of our mobile or on YouTube or something, visit online at, send me an email at online@saddleback.com. And that, I say that now because it's shifted. I didn't say that 3 years ago, but now people are watching in so many, or they're watching full screen, they're watching on an app, I have to say that email address to kind of do a catch all. And then they go to the next step card, and then the next step card, I'm leading them down a funnel where I'm trying to get them to take our membership class. I'm trying to get them into a class, and I have some ClickFunnels pages that kind of help guide them, where I've recorded things and give them options. And then I get them into we have a large Facebook group that has about 1800 people in it. And that group, I do regular Facebook Live things, my community post. I do like Zoom conversations in there with other members. And the whole idea is I'm modeling what does it mean to be part of the community. And that gives a new person to see, oh, wow. Like this week, somebody posted like, oh, I live in Tennessee. Anybody here? And I had 4 people comment, oh yeah, I'm in nearby. And the Facebook group has become more of our lobby experience, Monday through Saturday kind of. But ultimately I lead them into an online group, into a home group. And then I try to get them in a home group to host a service in their home with 5 to 10 people. And then, so it's really, our strategy is that start on the service online, but I'm trying to get them into a home gathering in their home. And at any point, if there's a church in their area, I let them know. If they're local, I plug them into our church. But that's like a shotgun.
I think what is so important, Jay, is you have the end in mind. You know, the end in mind is start a home group in your home and invite other people to your house to experience the service and experience community. I don't think you guys call it this, but you're in many ways creating a house church network,
yeah,
online church, you know? And so you all, I hear you use the term online to offline. That's your funnel. At, you know, at CBC, our funnel was not to get them into physical groups. Our funnel was really to get them into an online small group. Yeah. If it happened to turn into a physical one, that was okay, but that wasn't our path. Our path was discipleship in an online small group. I think what churches need to figure out is where do we want to take people to create an end in mind of where what fits your church, and then create a digital funnel, and you will build that funnel out of time. You don't have to have it finished when you start, but if you have a clear funnel in place, what you can do is you can expand the top of the funnel where people are coming in, and that's through ads, that's through, you know, many ways. I see why is our first step of the funnel a 1 hour live service? That's a huge commitment for people to randomly come into.
Yeah.
But at the top of our funnel is a 2-minute video that introduces our pastor and then captures the email and invites them to a longer service.
That's the key. And I've actually this week, we had a meeting. I'm working with CV Outreach now, formerly Searchable Church, now CV Outreach. And I think that's so important with what they're doing with the Google grant money.
Yes.
What they're doing is they're saying, we want to build an audience that's primarily unchurched, not Christian, and lead them to a church that can follow up. And so, you know, a lot of people, what they do, and this is not a bad model. It's not really a bad, it depends what your goal is. And part of it is some things we just were doing 6-8 years ago because that's all we could do. And so now it's a different model. But what they're saying is a lot of churches, what they do is that they run church finder ads.
Yep.
Hey, you're looking for a church in your area here. Yeah. And pretty much what you're running is you're running an ad targeting a Christian.
Yes.
And because they have to be Googling for your church, blah, blah, blah. And so what CV Outreach does is they create ads trying to find non-Christians looking for purpose. And I think that's, you're not looking for the atheist necessarily, like the person who wants to, like, you know, kill the Christian. You're looking for the person who has an open heart. You're looking for somebody who's willing, because that's going to be the highest conversion opportunity, and they're willing to talk. So they create landing pages that are 1-minute videos that literally driving to a button that says, you want to talk to somebody about this? And they're handing it off. And this is what we're doing, is that they're managing our Google grants now, and they're going to be running all the ads. And then they're going to just send those emails to my team. And then my team, I'm going to build a volunteer team. And then I'm just going to funnel that person into our online process. But I'm going to start with, you know, instead of throwing them into an online service that can be anywhere between an hour and 30 minutes long, I'm going to throw them into this personal. And I think that's a more targeted persona. You know, HubSpot would be happy with that process. And I think that's probably where a lot of it should go. And then they're even doing a pixel integration stuff where now they're dropping a pixel on that page, and they're starting to build a large unchurched audience that they can retarget on Facebook, which is killer, because you have now a peer data source of people that are unchurched that you can retarget on Facebook, which is like, okay, like, that makes no sense. And everything I'm saying, go to cboutreach.com.
Love it, totally makes
sense. So it's not a Christian audience. It's an unchurched audience that are ripe for the picking, like, that really want to talk to people. And I think that's so important. Christian, and both are okay. You can run local church. That's not saying no. It just depends what you want to do in this. And I think church online makes way more sense for the outreach purposes than it does to find a local church. I think you lead them to find a local church.
Yes.
I think 90% of your efforts should be around outreach purposes.
Jay, there are three great decisions I made in my life. Four. One was following Jesus. Two was marrying my wife. Three was doing a podcast with you. And four was selling Searchable Church to
Nick oh, yes.
and Christian Vision. Yes. Because what they are doing with CV Outreach is so awesome. I mean, it's so awesome. And it's the top of the funnel, you know, for any ministry. You, that's the most complex part that I couldn't do with a big staff at CBC. I think you would have a hard time doing it at Saddleback Church.
Oh, dude.
So I know other churches that are like, we can't run these ads. We can't create these landing pages. CV is doing it for free for you with CV Outreach. Yeah. And they're awesome. Like, they're awesome landing pages. Yeah. They're awesome videos. It's the top of the funnel. Now your job as the church is to build community and to disciple these individuals. They want to partner with the church. So every church should be using cvoutreach.com. It's awesome.
and I was asked this, I was actually asked, and they met with our IT team, and they were very grateful to kind of like integrate.
Yeah.
And because you have to host stuff on your stuff, and they help you figure it out. In our church, it can be a little bit complicated because there's a lot of security stuff, but they were very willing to work. But when somebody on our team asked, well, what are they getting out of it? It was a great, like, why are they doing this? And I said, well, it's pretty straightforward, is that they are an outreach. They have a big goal to reach 1 billion people, but they know that they can't do the deep discipleship long-term.
Yeah.
So they are willing, they want to partner with churches, and they'll front this cost at knowing that we will take on the long-term cost.
Yes.
And that's why they're doing it, is they want the pastor, the church that's willing to answer emails with somebody who really has questions. They'll take on that cost. That want to take on that cost. And so that, hey, we'll run this stuff, but you are going to take the long-term discipleship.
Yeah.
And so that's why they're doing it. If you're running, like, why would a ministry do this? That's why, that's the cost. You're going to take on the long-term discipleship. They'll run the ads. And you know, they'll track data on what's working and what's not. And so that's really great CV Outreach. You need to check it.
So here's my challenge and my takeaway from today's podcast. This is one of our longer podcasts, but I think this is one of our meatier podcasts. I'm having fun, having this conversation is that a church needs to really think through their funnel as they develop an online church. And when we say online church, we mean a place where you're trying to build community. It's okay to run a live stream if that's your goal and that's where your starting point. But when we talk about online church, we're trying to build a community of disciples, people that are growing in their faith. So figure out what is your funnel and create a clear path of maybe I would recommend, and you and I both recommend, start with CV Outreach and then maybe move them into your Facebook page and then maybe move them into, you know, your online church platform or church online platform, and then probably move them into maybe a Facebook group and then move them into a membership and then move them into hosting a service in their church. Figure out what your end goal is and what's your starting point, and then mesh the middle between. Make sure there are intentional transition points of how people move to each step and see where people are getting clogged, but create that funnel and then tweak it. You know, it's whatever your funnel is now is going to change a year from now, but have a clearly defined funnel and a clear process in which you're trying to move people closer to Jesus in community with others. Any other takeaways from you as we wrap up the podcast?
No, I just did a recording earlier today for my church online funnel series I'm doing on my personal with Elwood, our friend, and stuff they're doing. Yeah. It's just, there's so many, I would say there's so many churches that get stuck in the paradigm doing the same thing. And I think as you see Facebook Live, whatever other stream that you going on, always be willing to try new things. And I think that's what you hear from Niels and I. You know, I was telling Elwood that, you know, like, I've pivoted so many things, like even that, like Wirecast, we had this thing right now where it broke, it wasn't working. And I've been messing around with it all week, but I invested 45. I knew I was going to waste like an hour this week trying to figure it out but I knew if I could figure it out, which I haven't yet, it would be so beneficial for my ministry.
Yeah.
But even now I might have to, I'm going to try to get a refund because I don't think I need it because Zoom's webinar feature does it now. And I had to learn the hard way. And my hope is, if you're listening to this, I don't want you to learn the hard way. Learn from my mistakes on that. So this is part of it. Learning together, save $500. Oh, okay. Anyways. Oh man. Okay. Now I'm going to end this being mad at myself, but
it's good. This is a good conversation. Thanks everyone for listening to the Social Media Church Podcast. We love you. We appreciate all your feedback. We appreciate those of you that took the time to review us on iTunes. That means a ton to us. And we will see you guys next week.